So today is August 5th, 2014. We're in the Northway Tribal Offices or
Northway Corporation.
Northway Corporation offices. I'm Leslie McCartney. We're with Lorraine Titus and we're with Barbara Solarius. So thank you very much, Lorraine, for agreeing for this today. And let's just start with a little bit about your grandparents, because they used to travel a lot on the land you were telling us the other day.
My grandpa's Chief Walter Northway, and my grandma was Lily Northway. And on my dad's side, my grandparents were Peter Albert and Elsie Northway. And I was, my dad isn't, my dad's dad, Peter Albert, was from down the Copper area, so... That's kind of how, you know, I was pretty familiar with the region down there.
And so all of his ancestors, too, from before him were down from that area, too?
Yep, they were all from down there.
And on the grandmother's side, where were they from?
From here.
From here.
Yeah.
From the Northway area.
Yeah.
And that's on both sides of your parents, they were from here? It was just...
Both of them, except for, you know, Peter Albert.
Right. And so they lived traditional lifestyle, hunting and trapping in those areas?
Yep, and my grandpa traveled, you know, quite a bit, my grandpa Walter. And so that's their life, is the subsistence lifestyle. And so they knew, you know, a lot of people from the Otna area, plus, you know, the Upper Tanana. So they traveled quite a bit. So.
And so your dad grew up traveling a lot of the land with them, or...?
Not so much my dad, no, but my, you know, grandparents and other, you know, family members, you know, from his side of the family, so.
And so where were you born, and when were you born then, Lorraine?
I was born here in Northway some 60 years ago. So, and yeah, I'm just born and raised here.
Right. And so did you want more family history, Barbara, about brothers and sisters of the parents at all? Or do you know all the connections?
Well, the question that I was actually, the question that immediately I was thinking about was, were you born at home? Or I know that, like, in the Copper Basin, sometimes people ended up going someplace with a hospital.
No,
other
I was
people born,
at
were
home.
Born at home.
Yeah. Pretty much all of us, all our siblings were born at home, except for the last two.
So what type of lifestyle did you live as a child then, Lorraine?
A pretty tough lifestyle. my mom and dad, you know, traveled quite a bit, and they would travel around and, you know, like, go caribou hunting up to Taylor. And dad was, you know, trapped up in the Black Hills and, you know, all those places. And they pretty much didn't know, even know what welfare was, you know. And so they had to make a living doing all those kind of things.
And how many children with you and your siblings?
There was seven of us. Yeah.
And so then you just traveled from place to place.
We didn't so much travel.
Okay.
We were pretty much like maybe left with babysitters, or mom would stay home. But then when, like, they went out caribou hunting, they'd be gone for like a week up to Taylor, and we were with babysitters, and or somebody would stay home and watch us. And you know, when they were out moose hunting, they pretty much, you know, kept us home and stuff. So.
And so when they came back with moose and caribou, was it shared with everyone, or was it just simply for the family?
Just depends on all who went out. You know, they might split all of that, you know, amongst them. But I remember him getting moose and stuff, and he would split it among, you know, grandparents and other, you know, maybe somebody that doesn't have a husband, is a widow. He would, you know, share meat with them and stuff. So.
Did you spend much time with your grandparents when you were young? Or?
I was pretty much raised by my grandparents.
Yeah.
Because I think that often happens. So when you say they would leave you with a babysitter, was it a babysitter, or did you get left with your grandparents?
Well, sometimes there was, you know, maybe another younger aunt, you know, would stay with us. But pretty much as I was growing up until I maybe started school when I was, you know, 9, 10 years old or some, right around that age. Mm-hmm. But in between that, from when I was a little girl up to about that age, I stayed mostly with my grandma and grandpa. So.
Okay.
And then after I got older, I kind of spent a lot of time with them. So.
Mm-hmm. And so is it your grandmother then who taught you a lot of the traditional skills that you...
Yeah.
Teaching on today.
Yeah.
So the sewing and beading.
Both dancing. My mom and my grandparents. So.
Right. So where do I know you're a big proponent.
And my aunts. You know, some of my aunts.
You're a big proponent of education, Lorraine, you were saying the other day. So where did you go to school? And
I went here to Northway, and a lot of the kids up to my age all went to boarding school. The older ones, you know, my older brother and sister all went to boarding schools, you know, but when I hit age of high school, there was no way I was going to leave my brothers behind, my younger siblings. And so I just went to Tok and went and graduated from Tok school. So
right.
Just stayed with family or, you know, into a boarding program in Tok. So.
Right. So not too far from home.
Yeah. Couldn't leave my little brothers behind.
So did the school at that point only go...
To eighth grade.
Okay,
yeah.
So the school didn't go all the way to high school at the time, so that was, you had to leave. You had to go someplace else to continue.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And when did they get a high school here in Northway?
Back in, I think in 77, I believe, right around there, 70, in the late 70s, they started the high school. They built a new school and started the high school.
Uh-huh, so the before.
Yeah, it might be before that, you know, in that...
Oh, right around there.
Yeah, right around there.
I mean, you were telling us yesterday you worked for the school for
35 years, yeah.
So was that one of your first jobs then out of
no,
school?
No, I worked at, right after I got out of school, I worked as, started as a teacher's aide, then I got into the health aide field. And then from there I became the alcohol counselor for a couple years and then went into the school and I just stayed there.
Right. So... How did you enjoy being the health aide?
Challenging. Yeah. Very challenging. So.
Yeah. Did you have to go to school for courses for that, or was it just...
Trainings. Yeah, we went to trainings and stuff.
Right. Yeah. So 35 years at the school.
Yep.
And then you were also involved with the tribal council.
For years.
You said you started that when you were in your...
18. Yeah, I was 18 years old when I... And then I was president majority of the time, and then I kind of, you know, stepped down and, you know, a few years here and there, but I stayed on and kept getting back into the... So...
What were some of the early issues then? Or did the issues change over the years?
Changed quite a bit.
Huh. Tell us about it.
I don't know.
Okay.
It was challenging at the beginning because I was always taught, you know, by my dad that, you know, keep your mouth shut. You take, you know, and don't try to tell an older person anything. You wait for advice, you know. And then I got on the council, and here's all these older people on there, and it was hard to keep quiet, and I didn't know what to do, and. It was pretty challenging, and I had to go back to him and say, you know, what do I do, you know, because, and then he said, well, you were elected to do your job, so you're going to have to do your job, so.
That changes your status.
Yeah, but it was pretty hard to, you know,
and it was
to keep your mouth shut and wait for the advice. Don't try to overstep people, you know, and so it was kind of hard.
And did the elders respect that you were trying to ask questions to learn, or?
Yeah, they were pretty good. Actually, I think most of them stood right by me and tried to help, and they encouraged me, you know. And
right. So. Well, one of the issues that you were on the tribal council for is one of the reasons we're here today was for the inclusion of the community.
For adding recognizing Northway as a resident-owned community for Wrangell St. Elias.
Okay, I sat on the Wrangell St. Elias
the Subsistence Resource Commission.
And at that time, you know, we were looking at the zone, and I couldn't figure out why Northway, I think, and Tanacross were excluded. They kind of went around our community. They picked up Toke, and then they went around Tanacross and picked up Dot Lake. And so started asking questions. And then I said, you know, I think we should be included because we have people that's from the Bensonita area, from the, you know, from that area, and that have come down and migrated from Shoshana. Mm-hmm. And are now living in Northway. And so they had hearings here in Northway, and they got testimonies from a lot of the people here. And they ended up changing. And I think Walter Charlie, or Walter Charles, whatever his name, I can't remember his last name.
There
it
was
Charles or Charlie.
There was a Walter Charlie in Justina.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of them came in and really spoke, you know, and was supporting what I was trying to do. And that, I think that had a really big, you know, impact on them changing the zone. So
prior to that, nobody just really understood that your family mm-hmm. ties and other family ties from Northway had actually used those areas? Is that?
Yeah, it just seems like they thought nobody from Northway was, you know, from that area or even used that area. And when they were kind of surprised, I think, when they came down and got the testimonies and stuff of all the people that used or else were from that area, or their grandparents, I mean, their parents were from there.
Right.
So
most of the people who testified at that are no longer with us, a lot of the elders.
Yeah, well, we have some, but they're elders that probably just don't want to talk.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have Louis Frank and,
yeah.
you know, they moved from there, you know, with their family, so, and
right.
their parents, so.
Yeah. And so that must have been really satisfying for you and your community to get that included.
Yeah, we were pretty happy once that was done, so.
Right. Telephone. So do you still
either.
Go down that way then, on the land?
We use, you know, a lot of the fishing. And then sometimes they'll go down, you know, that area, yeah, and hunt, you know, moose and stuff. But most of the time it's just fishing and going down that way with, you know.
So do you use a Copper River fish wheel?
Yeah, they let us use wheel or, you know, something down there. Or else they'll call us and say, you know, we're overloaded with fish, you know, come down and get it. So we'll go down and get it.
Right.
So
I'm interested to maybe talk about culture camp. Is that possible? Your culture camp that you run. So when did that sort of start, Lorraine?
Gosh, I'm not really sure when it started.
And did you start it or did?
Yeah, I helped, you know, start the.
Yeah.
You know, get it going, but we decided we just wanted to do something, so we got out there and we did it, and we just continue to do it. And in the past, you know, we paid, you know, maybe somebody to run it and get it set up. And then we pay maintenance. We pay boat drivers and rent boats and do all this, you know, a lot of it was, I mean, then we hired a cook and, but anymore in the last few years, we said, if it's a culture camp, why are we paying people? You know, and so we started doing it voluntarily. The only thing we do is we supply the gas. We supply majority of the food, especially the everyday thing like water and, you know, and some of us will save like salmon or moose meat and we'll use that. We'll donate that to the culture camp. And actually nobody gets paid for doing anything now. You know, everybody helps cook and, you know,
and so
it seems like it runs way better that way. Nobody's pointing fingers at nobody or, you know,
right.
sitting back. It's just, you know, and a lot of them know it's volunteers, so they try to help. So it's been really good.
So whose camp is it at? Or
it's at my grandpa's native allotment, my grandpa Walter's native allotment. Mm-hmm. And it's just nice that the family let us use that. So.
Mm. And so during culture camp, what kind of activities are you're trying to teach most of the young people? Or is it just...
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of it is we try to get parents to get out and do things with their kids. And, you know, the kids come up. Sometimes we'll take kids and, you know, work with them. But we try to make the parents take these kids out. They camp with them, and then we try to teach them. We do a little bit of language. They do Indian dancing and singing. They cut fish. If they do get a moose, we usually put in for a moose permit. And if they get a moose, the guys go out there and they teach them how to skin and do all that. They get that done. And then, like, this summer, the last camp we had in 2013, we had one of our local girls go out there, and she taught how to make canvas boots and gun case out of canvas, and I taught how to make slippers from cutting it out to putting it totally together. Oh. And we had some really young kids doing it. So then we just supply all our own material and right. Donate it. So it was this year we didn't do as much as we did the year before because we were going to cancel it, and then we ended up just doing it. So a last minute thing. So
the weather's been so bad this summer.
Yeah. And but they did some beading. We had like three girls that were in their 20s that never beat it before and beat it. So they really got into it. So and just they make keychains, and we take those keychains and we save it, and at Christmas we give it to the elders. It's been pretty nice. So
you were telling us about the dance group that you've got together and how they've been learning their language, and you went to the Yukon and they were actually speaking in their language. And
yep, we went to Whitehorse last month in July, first part of July, and they performed at the Adaka Cultural something. And they were able to get up, introduce themselves in their language, and introduce the song, and they performed for them there. And actually, a guy came up to us after the dancing and got my phone number, and because he's from New York, and they have something going on in New York, and he said that he may contact me if he can get approval to have us go to New York. So, because he thought our kids were really unique, and he said he's seen lots of performance, but these kids were dancing at their own. They weren't trained to dance. They were just dancing. So he was pretty impressed with a six-year-old getting up and speaking the language. And so then we just, a week ago, went to Dawson, and then we went to Moose Hide and performed there for them too. And those kids were able to get up and speak too. So.
And what's the age group of the kids in the dance troupe?
I think our youngest one is like 3, and they range all the way up to, in the late 20s. Mm.
And how many are there?
Well, we took 35 to Whitehorse, and to Dawson we took 30.
There must be every child in Northway.
Well, it's... ranges. So yeah. Some of them were parents too, but they'd never done this before. So, and they got involved with their kids, and then they ended up learning to dance and speak too. So it's been.
And you speak a lot of the language then, Lorraine?
I'm not fluent, but I can understand all of it, and then I can speak most of it. It's just, it's hard for me to carry on a conversation, and if I think about it, I can do it, but it's...
So at home, what was the language predominantly spoken then?
English. Because I was probably one of the last ones that started school that we were punished if we spoke our language. So, and we were probably right around my age that we weren't able to go to the school at the airport. My older brother and sister had to go to the BIA school, even though we didn't live in the village. We lived along the road. We weren't able to go to school at the airport. Dad had to get them over to the village to go to school at the BIA school. And finally, some of the people would put their kids in with non-natives so that they could go to school. And somehow, I don't know what happened, but they opened the doors so that they could, we can all go to school instead of going four miles to get to school. So, and then when we got there, Dad was pretty much told that we couldn't speak our language. So, and Dad was a person that education was pretty important, you know. And so if we got punished at school for even saying ouch in our language out on the playground, and we were caught, we were not only punished at school, we were punished severely at home because, you know, so, but I guess just hearing it, you know, from my grandma and them and being able to communicate with my grandma and them, it was, you know, I kind of, but my older brother and sister can understand it, but to this day, they're too ashamed to speak it. And my younger siblings do not speak it at all.
So that it's still carrying through the fact that being punished for it. And yet the younger generation is actually wanting to relearn the language now.
They're not wanting to. They're still kind of, you know, hesitant in doing it. And especially my grandkids. I mean, the ones that live in town are really interested. The two that lives here, you know, they're kind of trying, but they're really hesitant, you know, about doing it. So, and then I explained to these kids when we're at culture night that this is your language. It was taken away from us. Now we need to learn it again. And so with me keep telling them that, it seems like they're getting more interested in learning. So,
right. But you were saying, unfortunately, at the school right now, they don't have a curriculum program in.
They don't have anything.
Right.
Yeah. So hopefully I can get it put into the schools once I figure out what we want. So.
Right. Yeah. There's certainly a lot of models to follow. So.
And when you spent time with your grandparents, did they primarily speak?
They both. Yeah. And I think I was fortunate having them because if I made a mistake with pronouncing, you know, the native word or something, my grandmother won't say, not that way. You know, she'll just say it the correct way and then go on from there. You know, and I knew so what she was doing. So, but I, you know, so I could hear it, but she didn't laugh or you know, say, you know, that's not the right way, you know, and stuff. And you hear that a lot from other people, you know, when you're trying to speak, you make mistake, they laugh and say, or else they'll say, that's not the way you say it, you know, really mean. And at our culture night, the kids do pronounce them wrong. And I had a couple people try to make the correction, and I said, don't you dare, don't you even go there. I said, then, you know, we say it over and over again until they get it. But I said, nobody's going to make any corrections here. If they say it wrong, we'll go back and we'll work on it. But, and it's been really good.
Did either of your parents then go to school then, Lorraine? Both your mom or your dad?
My mom went for a while. My dad was, you know, my dad's parents died when he was real small. So he ended up going to Mount Edgecombe at a very young age, and he was away from home for years. And then he came back, I think he was in his 11th grade year when his brother died and left his two kids. And he asked Dad to, and he was in Mount Edgecombe in Sitka Hospital, so Dad came back to take care of his two kids. And that's how he ended up with Mom. He was going to just take care of the two kids, and then he ended up with Mom. So, but he came back to...
So well, the reason I ask is I was just wondering if they had been forced to leave their language too and learn English. That was...
My dad remembered it.
He did? So it's not like he had to come back and relearn anything. Wow.
He didn't speak it, you know, but he understood all of it. And, you know, but he remembered most of it, so.
So over the years, being on all the councils, what big things have come up or changes that you, other than the inclusion into the park, what are some of the other issues that your communities had to deal with?
I'm not sure. Okay. I'd have to think about it. I mean, when you live it, you just don't realize the changes, you know, until, you know, something comes up, then you think, geez, you know, we didn't do that a long time ago, you know?
We were talking to Tom earlier, and he was saying about...
Is it useful?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to check, because I think our room is up there.
Okay. Tom was just saying that there used to be so many businesses along the highway. Uh-huh. And used to employ so
and
many
there
people.
Used to been, like, the big change I seen, and I don't know how that happened, was... You know, we used to have so many people here in the community, 450, almost 500 people. And we had, at one time, like 101 kids in the school. You know, now we're down to like, you know, barely hanging on to 50, you know, and probably less now. So, and seems like we had more houses too. But I don't know why right now we don't seem like we can, you know.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of families want to come home, but there's no place to live.
Right.
So.
And but a lot of people go out for jobs and other
pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then what the big difference I think I've seen is a community used to be a really close community. Like during holidays, you know, everybody came for Christmas, everybody came for New Year's. You know, they just got together for holidays.
So more community gatherings.
Yeah, I mean, really close, you know, and even the elders, you know, they all came up, new tear laughing and everything. But it seems like after we got all our new houses built and TVs came in, and now when you come up for Christmas and stuff, you see just a handful of people. It's not everybody that comes up anymore. It's and it's really sad. So I've been doing a lot of promotion. We'll raise money and we'll buy new sweatshirts, backpacks for the elders and toys for the kids, you know, and we would try to do a community type thing to try to bring the gathering back.
Mm-hmm.
And I always blame the new house and TV and now nobody wants to get out of their house, you know, because, I mean, before you want to get out because you're in the one, you know, log cabin with, you know, 10 kids, so you want to get out. So it's just like, you know, it's sad because, you know, those kids are going to remember, you know, those kind of things when they get older, you know, because those are my precious moments that I remember in... My kids are the same way. They said it's not Christmas unless you come to the village, you know, for Christmas. That's their Christmas.
Yeah.
So.
Huh.
So when did the new houses get built?
Well, back in, I think, 84 was when they first built the log houses.
Uh-huh.
And I think in 90, early 90s, they built the...
The gray ones?
The gray ones, and then they just built some more recently, so.
Hmm. So is that like the housing authority?
Yeah, through the housing authority.
But with the loss of businesses along the highway and the airport too, Lorraine, a lot of like a lot of people became unemployed or had to go look for work.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of them had to go to school, you know, which is great, you know, and they just, a lot of them had to further their education, and once they got it, you know, there's no job for their career here. So,
well, you were even saying about your own children. You've got one daughter who's a nurse.
Uh-huh.
And what were the other professions?
Other one son is working for TCC as a housing director, and then my youngest son is up north working on the
right.
You know, he's working as a roustabout on the drill rigs. So,
yeah.
And my oldest daughter works for Eliezka, and she moved for education of her girls too, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm. And then what about the tribal businesses here? Because you kind of have your hand on that too, don't you? Has that changed over the years?
Well, there's a difference between the tribal council and the corporation.
Oh,
you know, the corporation is, you know, through ANCSA that we're profit making.
Profit
business. And then down there is, you know, the tribal council is governing, you know, through grants and so. And then I kind of pulled out of that one and been on this board since it first incorporated.
And when was that?
In 71. And then worked, you know, through, I just stayed on the board, and then finally I came in to start working. So,
so getting back down to the Wrangell area, since your grandparents had ties down there, your family still go down there at all, or?
Not so much.
Mm-hmm.
I think my brother's hunting the Besner Road, but, you know, that's about it. We haven't, you know, been down there.
Right.
So.
And you said that Peter Frank came from...
Peter Albert.
Peter Albert. I've got people confused. Uh-huh. Peter Albert came from Copper River?
Family too, like Louis Frank and, you know, he's an uncle to Louis Frank and them, Steve. They were related to my dad.
Benzaniti area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So... So,
I wanted to ask a little bit about the schools. You talked about how there used to be two schools in Northway when you were little.
Yep. Actually, I think kindergarten, first grade, they had two different schools, and then they allowed us to go to school that lived along the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were non-native, you could go to school there, you know, and get dropped off. And then some of them would move their kids in with non-natives so they could go to school. And then somehow they started, not a bus service, but I think a station wagon-like, and then they let us go. Yeah, they let us go to school there finally. And they still had two different schools for a long time. And then back, I think I graduated... And then I left home, and my dad was the president of the village council. Mm-hmm. He became the president of the village council, and he went over to the village and kind of was spending time in the BIA school. He would come sneaking in the back, and he would listen to see what was going on. And then one day that year... That following year, he was working with the state to try to get them to open the state schools for all kids in the community instead of having two schools. He wasn't happy with the way they were teaching over at the, you know, BIA school, and he was really frustrated. He was really unhappy, and he tried to talk with the teachers, and then he finally, actually, you can find it in the Tundra Times. He made the headline in Tundra Times, but he said, if you don't open the doors, the kids will be sitting out on the sidewalk, all of them. They are not going to the BIA school. They are coming up to the airport to go to the state school, and if you don't open the doors, they're going to sit out there. And he actually closed that BIA school. And then we're going to take the kids up, and they tell him no, you know, and stuff. They brought in modulars, and they, like, four modulars, and a lot of those kids quit school because they were in eighth grade. They were put back into, like, fourth, fifth grade, so they all quit school, and, you know, they had a heck of a time, you know, and it wasn't the kids' fault because they weren't being taught.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there were kids, you know, pretty much my age, and maybe younger, that dropped out of school.
Mm.
So,
did you have any teachers that were really inspirational to you?
I guess a lot of them. A lot of them.
Yeah.
So, I grew up in a pretty, in between the years, I think, with my grandma, mm-hmm. between my parents and stuff. My parents were, you know, when they drank, they were chronic alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, went through a lot through the years.
Mm-hmm.
But when Dad was sober, you know, he talked to us a lot. And same with Mom. You know, we grew up pretty rough. And I think that's why I didn't want to leave home, is because I didn't want to leave my
younger siblings.
Yeah, you know, siblings to be by themselves and have to take care of themselves. So.
Right.
And my older brother and sister didn't really know because they were in boarding schools, mm-hmm. you know. And so.
Right. So at summertime, did you go to fish camp at all with your grandparents?
Well, it was just right here. Yeah, but now it's all underwater and there's snow, you know. But we spent almost every summer over there at fish camp.
Yeah.
And, you know, help mom cut, you know, bring up fish and cut it. And so they would be over there doing it. And
so would you move there for the summer?
Yeah, for the pretty much for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
They just move us, you know, we just moved over there.
And did you use boats to get there?
No, we walked. It was just a little walking distance.
Uh-huh.
And they had built fish traps and we just dipped net them out.
Okay.
The whitefish, and that's all we had was whitefish.
And then so. What did you do with the fish once you had them harvested?
We cut them and hung them to dry.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And pretty much lived on whitefish. We always laugh when we first went to the state school. You know, the kids from the FAA would bring nice white sandwiches, you know, and with peanut butter and jelly. And we would come and hide our luncheon bag because mom would fry some biscuits and she would make us peanut butter and jelly. You know, we were hiding. Those kids would trade us.
Oh.
All the time. I mean, they would want our sandwich, and here we were, didn't want them to see
you were
it.
Embarrassed.
And, so then we thought, man, how stupid could we have been trading our good food for just because we wanted white bread? That was bad for us in the first place. We always sit around and laugh about that. We'd tell the kids. Or mom would roast, you know, moose meat, mm-hmm. and then she'd slice it and make us, you know, sandwich and take it up there. And we would hide it, and they'd even pay us to give them.
You said the fish camp's underwater now. Why is that? Just the change in the climate?
The
levels or the road?
Up the river.
Yeah.
Up the Shoshana there. The state, for some odd reason, there's some people that work for DOT back, I don't even know what year it was, so they have documentations on it, but they dynamite that one little creek there. And so it became a river, and it came into all the fishing area, all these lakes. That's why when you go towards down there, you get to that little one bridge, you see all that water, and even before that, that is all river now. I mean, river water coming in there because they broke that, you know, place and it became
a river. Oh, it broke through.
Yeah, they used dynamites and they, you know, opened up spot and then it just slowly and then pretty soon it's just flowing now. And so there's constantly water down in the lower part and it's all from the river.
Wow.
So then do you have to go someplace else to fish now?
It's pretty hard, yeah. Now we have to go way out. And we can fish the river, you know, once it starts running. But other than that, we have to go through the summer just to dry way up the river. And not many people here have boats and stuff to do that. Before, they used to just go down there and down at fish camp, yeah.
That's why it's called fish camp.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Right.
Because they used to go back behind that place and walk back there. And there's a little creek there.
A good place for putting in the traps.
Yeah.
Because you need.
And kids would just sit there all night and, you know, wait for the fish to come in and they dip them out, you know, because they had a trap and then they had the net in there. And they used to string them up in willows and take them to, you know, the elder smokehouses. And we used to do that when we're small, just fill their smokehouses up and we'll go to sleep and they get up and cut fish, you know. So,
and is the fishing good out at Culture Camp at all? Do you do much fishing?
Yeah, we have to go out to the lake, and this year, that's the same thing. It's hard to get into the lake because that creek flows in, and then it gets
sediment.
Yeah, and it's hard to get through there. You know, the water's really shallow, so we usually wait till the water's a little bit high to get in there, and that's why we're. Sometimes debate on when we're going
when
up.
When to have the camp.
Yeah.
Even with all the rain this year?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Still kind of shallow.
Yeah, it's still shallow.
Wow.
So.
And how many folks usually come to your culture camp?
Last year we had like 161, I think. And then this year, I'm not sure, but I think we had over 100 people.
Uh-huh. And did some of the families who've moved away come back?
Some of them, yeah, they'll come just for it. And then I mean, we even have babies. They take babies up there. And it's just, it's just a tent city. It just mm-hmm. becomes a tent city there. And everybody just enjoys it. So. And, that it's not that all 100 and something stay,
They come and go,
but for the last few years, a lot of them have stayed. They just stayed, stayed up there. So it's been pretty good.
Can you think of anything else?
You mentioned the FAA kids, going to school with the FAA kids. Were there other non-native families?
That live along the road. Yeah, they might live along the road and.
So when you say live along the road.
Along the highway. Yeah, they might have a homestead and.
So there was homesteading along the stretch of road too?
Yeah.
Like the trade and manufacturing sites or?
No, you got some families that moved in. Maybe they ran a business
or maybe,
I can't remember why. But mostly FAA kids, and we might have a couple families that lived along the road.
And then were most of the teachers non-native?
They're all non-native, yeah.
Even at the BIA school?
Yep.
And do you remember which year the schools merged?
Back in the late 60s.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the current school was built when?
They moved into that school in 76, 77. Around there, yeah. Because I started working there in 78.
And have you had many native or local teachers who have been local people teaching the school?
We had one native teacher here. And actually, she's ready to retire. And that's all we had. No, actually, we had another one. Yeah, we've had a couple. Maybe.
Most of the teachers stay for a long time, or is there...
In the past, not anymore. And we've been fortunate this last few years that we had, a couple that stayed a little longer, but most of them will come and go. But we had some that really stayed a while and then just kind of made Northway their home.
What other changes to the village then, since you've... I mean, other than it going from quite large to quite small and the social relationships changing, you said talked about the housing changing and the TVs. Still not good internet there in the village.
It's ever since we last few years started promote, things. It's getting better, and I hope it gets better. Just for the kids' sake, so that the community can be together. So.
Right. And as we know, there's no cell phone coverage.
Yeah. Thank God. Here's that phone.
One phone is enough.
Let alone everything else.
Even when I go to town with my cell phone, I shut it off. But only when I need to call somebody, I turn it off. Or else it don't quit.
So you have a cell phone for when you go
other
places.
A prepaid cell phone, so because I ain't paying no $30 a month for going to town once every 3 months or something.
Yeah. Well, I thank you, Lorraine. Is there anything else you wanted to tell us about Northway's affiliation with the park at all? Or
no, I'm kind of glad they made that decision to, include us in the zone. So
it's been really interesting for me talking to people here and hearing about the connections with Shoshana and the connections with Benzenady, because I've kind of heard bits and pieces from some folks, but it's good to get it sort of more formally documented.
Yeah.
Not just sort of people who are going hunting, but the fact
that... And I've been just rattling my brain trying to remember the when we had the hearing. When they all came down and different people were coming up and
I may well have stuff in the
I'm trying to sit here and I'm trying to think. I know there was quite a few, but I can't remember.
Well, and I'm sure that we have some files from
Well, a report came out about it. So.
Yeah.
Well, there was an environmental... various environmental documents associated with making the decision because we have to document them. But for this project, we also wanted just to hear people's stories and be able to share them. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Kate. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for taking time out of your busy day.
All right.
Thank you.